Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studio right here in the heart of Hudson County. Folks, you know it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you the three-time award-winning Politically Direct. I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. And certainly I want to thank you all for tuning in this week here from wherever you are in Hudson County and also throughout the Garden State and, of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. Now, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, ladies and gentlemen, and that is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic coming up, hey, I want to hear from you, so write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. And also check out my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. Tons of new followers, plenty of likes each and every day. I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories, a little pop culture, politics, pro wrestling, sports, some motivational quotes. But overall, I know you enjoy them because the traffic remains pretty high. So, yes, again, thank you so much for that. And check me out on Instagram whenever you can. Also, folks, hit me up on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. Once again, tons of new followers and likes there. I'm sure you'll enjoy my content. If you enjoy the others, you'll certainly enjoy me on Twitter as well. And for all of you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course. Tell your friends to do the same. 1,000 plus likes and counting on the page, folks. So obviously, once again, Politically Direct is doing something right on Facebook, as I still have a loyal following there on Mark Zuckerberg's social media platform. Now, don't forget to check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Folks, no one does it better than Insider NJ. It starts with our just the excellent staff at the very top, the editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, along with our wonderful columnists, Jay Lassiter, Fred Snowflack, even Alan Steinberg sometimes, who's a little crazy and sometimes delusional with some of his writing, but good writer, and certainly there's a little something for everybody, let's just say that, within Insider NJ. So definitely check out the columns, folks. And once you're on the website, you'll see in the upper right-hand corner the subscribe button. Click on that, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So during the morning when you're watching, hopefully, some respectable cable news programs in the morning. I'm not sure what those are anymore. It's definitely not CNN or MSNBC or even Fox News for that matter. But whatever you're watching, or maybe you're watching the sports shows like I do. I love to watch Fox Sports. I do try to stay away from ESPN. But whatever it is you're doing, I'm sure you're on your phone, right? So if you're on your phone, scrolling through it, right, maybe checking social media, but you're definitely checking your inbox. And guess what? You're checking your email. It'll be right there waiting for you, the latest news, what's going on in Trenton, and really around the state of New Jersey. And nobody, again, does it better than the Morning Intelligence Briefing brought to you by Insider NJ. Once again, don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Folks, again, it's the best journalism anywhere in the Garden State. So don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed here and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalist, or our sponsors. Well, folks, hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Certainly, I know I did. Not very happy with the football, of course, obviously, as my Cowboys continue to decline. But I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. And certainly, again, I can't say enough about how grateful I am to all of you and thankful for supporting, you know, Insider NJ and, of course, Politically Direct. Since we started this podcast in January of 2018, it's been a blessing to be on the air. And certainly, you know, the traffic speaks for itself and the awards speaks for itself. And without question, you know, it's up to me to, you know, bring you the exclusives that you won't hear anywhere else. And, of course, to ask the questions that no one else is asking in New Jersey politics. So I'm proud to do that. And I'm even prouder of the fact that you continue to listen every week here via insidernj.com/podcast. And without a doubt, you know, I am deeply humbled, folks. And I'm not the most humble person. If you know who I am, you know I'm not the most humble person. But I'm deeply humbled by your faith in my abilities and certainly your confidence and the support that's ongoing for this program. So I love y'all, and certainly, again, I'm thankful for it. And I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. And certainly as we, you know, obviously we're now in December, hopefully trying to have some sort of normalcy with the upcoming holiday season. And we'll try to do that here on the broadcast. And certainly, folks, as I mentioned before, the exclusives that nobody else gets. Here's another one this week here. As joining me is the distinguished president of MBI. And that is one of the state's largest public affairs firm. You can definitely check out their website at www.mbiglucksha.com. And without question, folks, it's a great public affairs firm. It's a wonderful team when you check out the website and check out the roster. But leading the way, obviously, is their leader and their president. And he joins me this week. He's my guest, the great Rudy Garcia, here on Politically Direct. Rudy, how are you, sir?
Fernando, and first of all, let me say thank you. It's an honor to be on your show. I love your tenacity. I love the way you bring the issues directly to the people, and you're doing a great job on this program. I want to congratulate you and Insider NJ for all that you do collectively, and certainly you, Fernando, with your program and bringing insight to our communities.
Well, Rudy, that's really kind, man. Thank you so much for those wonderful words, and I'll make sure to tell my bosses to listen to the program, obviously, as I'm sure we'll get good traffic here today when it airs.
I'll tell them, too. Don't worry.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I'll start lobbying for you, Fernando.
I appreciate that. speaking of lobbying, you know, Rudy, one of the things that probably my audience isn't aware of, and it's a word that's thrown around very loosely, and maybe a lot of people don't know what it means. Or when people say, for example, MBI is one of New Jersey's largest public affairs firms, well, that sounds great, and certainly you're all very good at what you do, and MBI is a very reputable you know, public affairs firm. But for our audience that just doesn't know, what does that mean? What does it mean to be a lobbyist? What does it mean to engage in public affairs? Give us an idea about what that entails and how demanding of a job and a career this is.
Yeah, well, first of all, I did not set out to become a lobbyist. when I began in all this. Fernando, my mom, I'm blessed enough that my mom brought us from Cuba, 1968, penniless and unfamiliar with the language or culture. My mom taught us that you have to work hard, and that not only that, those who are blessed have a social responsibility to help those who are least fortunate. And one of the things that I learned early on is that the political process was a way to make a difference, not only in your life, but in the life of your community. And I was very fortunate and luckily had the opportunity to become an assemblyman at age 27, to become a mayor at age 33, and I had spent close to 10 years in Trenton. And the first time I went to Trenton, I didn't really know where it was. I didn't really know what a lobbyist was. But over time, I had become a lawyer. I had worked really hard in college and law school. So I was prepared. I figured I was as prepared as anybody to become a legislator. And I learned that lobbyists were really a tool that legislators used and to help inform them on certain and fill in certain gaps in stories. I think as a legislator, that people get sometimes they get news that circulated to them by a certain sector, but there's sometimes other factors that they have not been brought to light. And I think a lobbyist's job or the public affairs is to make sure that your issue is framed and able to be directed in the most beneficial way, but the most honest way, because that's the only way you last in this business.
Well, speaking about lasting in the business, and you brought up your time in the assembly and certainly your time in Trenton and obviously now working in lobbying. You know, Rudy, one of the things I talk about on this program religiously, and it's something that, and I don't say it to be bombastic, I don't say it to be inflammatory, but as a homeowner and as a taxpayer, I continue to be increasingly frustrated with Trenton. And the reason for it is it just seems that, you know, New Jersey seems to become more expensive by the hour. And for whatever reason, it just seems that, and again, I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but it just seems like Trenton overall, and specifically the legislature, I would say lately, seems to be tone deaf when it comes to these concerns for people like me and others that, you know, we're still living here. Like, I'm going to live in New Jersey for the rest of my life. I don't want to move away because it's going to be too expensive. I want to stay here as long as I possibly can. But that's not a reality for a lot of New Jerseyans, Rudy. And I'm sure you talk to a lot of people who probably share that sentiment. It just seems that Trenton, for some years now, is doing taxpayers a disservice. Is that perception wrong, or can it be fixed?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's two things. I mean, in order to be social justice, there has to be economic justice. Otherwise, it is short-term, right? So people could give lip service to different sectors that they may believe that everyone should be given equal opportunities. But if you don't back it up with some economic justice, then, you know, that will never be the case. For example, I'm going to give you, I'm very proud to represent the New Jersey Firefighters Mutual Benevolent Association, the NJFMBA. 2 years ago, I was very involved in the fight to be able to make sure that all of our police, fire, and the PFRS, the Police and Firemen's Retirement System, that their pensions, that they could basically make sure that their pensions were utilized for their own benefit, that because these people put themselves on the line every day. And in the past, people have taken money from their pension systems. So we fought to make sure that Trenton or no one else could be able to take money away from their pension systems. For that, though, some people would say, oh, wait, but then we're finding now to make sure that that pension is fully funded in accordance with the terms of the contracts that have been written throughout the years. Some people may say, that's not fair. We have to renegotiate that. They're not entitled to that. But this is a country of laws. And when you draft a contract across a bargaining table and you agree to do something in the future, if you live up to your expectations, I think that is only what's fair and appropriate. So that is one example that Fernando, yeah, maybe it's made it a little more expensive to live here, but I think it also helps maintain the middle class, the people who are putting their lives on the lines for all of us every day out there, whether, and I think it really is helpful.
Well, listen, Rudy, without question, as someone who worked in public sector unions for 10 years before entering academia, listen, without a doubt, I understand the importance of funding pensions. I think, as you alluded to, there's a problem with that that has – and to be fair, you know, because I sometimes get on Governor Murphy for a lot of things, but this is certainly a problem, Rudy, that precedes him. I mean, this is a problem that has gone on to his predecessor, Chris Christie, to John Corzine, to, you know, going back to Christie Whitman. So this is an ongoing problem in Trenton, though, for some time, right? I mean, that's at least the perception of it when it comes to
sure. I was in the legislature when Christie and Tom Whitman borrowed that $4 billion from the pension that started the slide from when we used to have, when the pensions were overfunded to when they became underfunded. I think that one thing, to Governor Murphy's great credit, he's the one who's invested more money into the pension system than any other of those governors that you mentioned. So I think Governor Murphy deserves a lot of credit, and I think more credit than he gets at this point.
Well, no, listen,
that's
a fair point.
Go ahead.
No, that's a fair point, Rudy, and I'll definitely concede that for sure. And it's something to keep an eye on because, as we know, that public pensions and public sector unions are a very big component of New Jersey politics. They just are, especially out of Trenton. Let me ask you this, though, because I know it's another big issue in Trenton that and here's a number for you that probably I know you're aware of because of what you do for a living, but and I was talking about this with some colleagues before COVID. I mean, obviously COVID, and we'll talk about the impact of COVID in a moment. But here's a number that should blow your mind, and I always bring it up with my guests when we talk about spending in New Jersey. But in 2004, Rudy, then-Governor Jim McGreevy introduced a budget to the legislature of $21 billion. Now, in January of this year, now again, before COVID, before not even knowing what was going to happen to New Jersey, being ravaged the way it was because of COVID-19, Governor Murphy was set to introduce a budget of almost $45 billion to the legislature. Now, I get it. It's 16 years later. There's inflation. There's cost of living. There's a plethora of variables here that goes into it. But, Rudy, I have to tell you, when I look at a number that big, it makes you wonder, again, just as a homeowner, as a taxpayer myself, and even as an academic, right? I'm a big policy guy. I look at that number, Rudy, and it blows my mind about how inflated some would say the state budget is. You deal with lobbying, you deal with public affairs. Is that a fair perception by me or anyone else that, wow, this state budget is really inflated?
I think whether that number is inflated or not, it has over time, has it grown more than like the average cost of living and have, I would say you're probably right. Over the last 20 years, whatever, it's grown probably quicker than other measures. But I'll say this. You said you're into public policy. The problem is that people always look at problems and try to address them in the same fashion. And I think there has to be some change in addressing policy. For example, right now, there's a bill before the legislature that Horizon is going to mutualize its holding company. That is a great innovative step that will help keep healthcare costs down for that public sector that state government pays for. Because what happens to state government is that they pay the bill. If you're seeing double-digit increases in healthcare premiums compounded every year, it's very hard for the state to keep up with those costs without increasing its own direct cost budget, like you said, that's doubled almost in the last 20-something years. So Horizon is just going to take their mutual holding company so they could invest some of the premiums above their corresponding $575 million cushion that they have to maintain, and they could invest it in companies' products that they utilize to help make healthcare more affordable for New Jersey. And the benefit of that is that all the money that's captured there in order to the benefit of their stockholders, and since Horizon's a mutual holding company wholly owned by the state of New Jersey, it's the state of New Jersey residents and its ratepayers. And that's been controversial. Some people are thinking, oh my God, it's like people are running out of here with money. No, they're doing a great job. And I think this bill is going to help curb some of those costs, that Fernando will help lower some of that increases in state spending every year.
Well, Rudy, let me ask you this, because it seems that, you know, we're looking at a number that is really inflated in Trenton, and we're looking at it from a perspective that is, for many New Jerseyans and taxpayers, seems to be maybe a little too high. And for a lot of people who, again, maybe just average working class people, when we think about how spending is addressed in the legislature, is it as complicated as it looks, or does it become just overly difficult?
I think what happens is sometimes people just throw money at a problem rather than making sure that there is a return in the corresponding benefit to the community affected. I give the example that I'm from Union City. I'm very proud to be from Union City, New Jersey.
Same here.
And I was the product of a school that was taken over by the state, where the mayor had been indicted for corruption. And we were one of the worst performing schools in America at that point in time. But the truth is that people were saying that they spent too much money in Union City on education and other Abbott districts. Without the school being open, without the after-school programs, without the early daycare programs, without the lunch program, all of these things that some people don't utilize. I live in the suburbs now, and quite frankly, most of the people here are saying exactly what you're saying. Oh, it costs too much money. It's, you know, they're throwing good money after bad. That they're pricing us out of this state. And I was a product of, if I start calculating all the money that the state of New Jersey, the federal government, spent on me when we first came from Cuba, just with lunch programs, sports and recreation programs, that they, after school programs, it's a big number. But I think the value is in the long term, that if you create that economic opportunity for these young kids, give them a proper education, try to help them move up, they're going to help more people move up. And I think at the end of the day, the state collects more money. And even though, just one thing, even though taxes may be at, like you said, doubled in the total budgets, doubled in the last number of years, the state budget's still balanced. So the tax obligation on people have not gone up as dramatically as the budget numbers, because revenues have increased along the way. So just that's some food for thought. People look at one side of the equation, but the other side of the equation is if you spend that money wisely and you really give it to people who are going to utilize it, like tax credits for small mom and pop stores that could grow their businesses, that becomes an incubator. That's what's going on with the social justice debate on marijuana, whether or not African American, okay, Hispanic communities can have the opportunity. And Fernando, that's what we want, is economic opportunity to create for ourselves the ability to help others.
You know what? That's a great point, and I'm glad you brought up marijuana, Rudy, because definitely one of my questions to definitely dig into in a little bit with you. But you brought up a great point about spending wisely. And again, here's something I've talked about on this program with other guests in recent months about dissecting the budget. I've talked to legislators who've been on this podcast in recent weeks to talk about it. And let me ask you this, because, you know, as the son of a Cuban mother, you know, I share the same cultural background as you do, Rudy, and growing up in Nazi County my whole life, you know, living in the city for as long as I have. Listen, I'm the son of immigrants, as are you. And, you know, here in New Jersey, the immigrant community is a big portion of not just the electorate, but really of the living population. And, you know, and one of the things that I know Governor Murphy, being as progressive, and that's a word that's very loaded today, you know, one person's progressive is another person's liberal, et cetera. So I don't want to delve into that too much. But for example, in the state budget, though, and maybe, again, I'm not sure in your lobbying capacity you were aware of this or anything else, but for example, I know that this past year, Rudy, when the budget was signed in September due to COVID, obviously later than what's constitutionally mandated by June 30th, for example, the governor and the legislature decided to allocate $6.2 million to a legal fund for providing legal representation to undocumented immigrants who are fighting deportation, right? So that's an increase of $3.1 million from the previous year. You know, Rudy, someone like me, or even my parents, my mom who came from Cuba along with my grandmother and my aunt, the same time around 1968, okay, right around the same time as you did, they sit here and, you know, Rudy, they look at things like this and they'll say, wait a minute, there's, you know, the average property tax bill in New Jersey, Rudy, is $8,953. So someone like my mom and dad would say, wait a minute, with $6.2 million, just do the math, you can give property tax relief to 600,000 families or house or homeowners in New Jersey. But instead, the governor wants to take taxpayer dollars to a legal fund to help undocumented immigrants. Someone like my parents, Rudy, it doesn't make them racist or bigots, but they're going to be like, ¿qué esto? What's going on here? Why is the governor doing stuff like this? And you know what, Rudy? They're not wrong. And there are a lot of other Latinos and Hispanics in New Jersey would say, espera un momento, wait a minute. Why is the governor and the legislature taking taxpayer dollars for this when it could go to that? That's something that kind of drives us crazy already.
Fernando, I think, hey, listen, your mom's a very wise lady, and obviously she did a great job raising her son. And,
Thank you.
Those are the type of success stories that we all share. But I tell you what my mom would say. If people thought that way when we first came to this country and they didn't have those social programs that you took advantage of, maybe there wouldn't be a Rudy talking on the phone to you today. Maybe I would have, you know, some other type of role and I wouldn't be helping others. And that's the cost is sometimes even many undocumented aliens. And my daughter would say, hey, the more you open up the door, the more you open up opportunity, because the jobs that they're taking, Fernando, as you know, are the jobs that nobody else will do here. We are the hardest working community, and they take the jobs that people will not take.
No, that's fair. Listen, that's a fair assessment. I don't disagree for a moment at all. I think absolutely right on that.
I think both our moms are right.
No, I get what you're saying. But for example, like I said before, like for a lot of Latinos, Rudy, and again, people in my mom's and my dad's age demographic, like my mom is in her late 60s, my dad's in his early 70s, you know, someone would hear my parents complaining and some people would turn around and be like, oh, that's racist. that's bigoted. No, it's not. I think it's just people being like, wait a minute, why is Trenton not giving people property tax relief and instead spending money on this? I think sometimes people turn around and say, well, wait a minute, I think maybe Trenton priorities aren't where they should be. Am I wrong, or is that perception again?
I think that's perception. I think people take, like you said, a $3 million increment in a $42 billion budget and try to make political hay out of it. So that's my thought. That's a rounding error in Trenton, unfortunately, Fernando.
No, sure. No, absolutely. No, I hear you. Getting back to the point you mentioned about marijuana, obviously, we know that last month on Election Day, you know, about 32 days ago, New Jerseyans, by an overwhelming margin, by a percentage of 67% to 33%, told Trenton, hey, we want to be the 13th state in the country, in the 12th state in the country, to legalize marijuana recreationally for people over the age of 21. Now, Rudy, it's, you know, and you were in the legislature, so you kind of know, you know, the pressure's on. They're up against the clock here. They have to kind of roll up their sleeves and get this right. And Rudy, again, I don't want to sound cynical because it's just me. It's not me in my capacity as a journalist or as an academic, but I'm kind of nervous as to whether or not in this small window, because again, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that once it on Election Day, the ballot question passed by an overwhelming margin. Now it's up to the legislature, I think, within a certain window to put this on paper, to regulate it, et cetera, tax it accordingly, whatever it is. If it's not done by January 1st, it almost seems, Rudy, like it could become the Wild Wild West in New Jersey. That's the perception I get, and I think that's the perception a lot of people in New Jersey get about Trenton and whether or not they can get this done on time. What are your thoughts?
Well, the good news is the legislature, Nick Scutari in particular, who's a great senator, working with the Senate President, the Speaker, and Governor Murphy, and George Helmy, who have done, they have been working on this for a long time. They didn't start working on this the moment the that law passed, the referendum passed this November. They had been working on that for a long time, and luckily they'll be done with the final version of that bill by next week, and it'll be voted on. Before I think on December 17th, and the Marijuana Commission, its commissioners, everything will be constituted according to that law, which will be done before the end of the year.
All right, listen, that's great to hear, and I'm glad that obviously you know you have an inside track in Trenton, so obviously the information you're giving me. Is on the money.
Yes.
So I'm appreciative of that, and I know my audience is too. But Rudy, at the end of the day, you know, again, as we all know, the devil's in the details, and
absolutely.
I'm always concerned about A, what this legislation's going to say, and B, as I said before, you know, sometimes a lot of us get into this mindset of, hey, you know, we don't trust Trenton, you know, they find a way to tax things unnecessarily and regulate it in a way that maybe isn't in the best interest of people. Listen, I'll be the first one to tell you, and I've said this to other guests before, you know, before entering academia, I worked in our criminal justice system, Rudy, for 10 years. So I went to jails in Kearney for Hudson County. I went to the Essex County Jail in Newark. I worked with clients. I worked with defendants, okay, primarily black and brown people that have been disproportionately affected by marijuana laws. So, again, and I've said this before, I don't care about marijuana. I don't smoke it. I never have. I don't care to, never will. But I don't want people indiscriminately being incarcerated for, you know, unnecessarily, as we have been doing in New Jersey for decades. And it's a national problem because of the way marijuana is regulated as a controlled substance. But Rudy, at the end of the day, I'm really concerned that if this is taxed too much, you know, what incentive does the regular person in New Jersey have to not seek out the black market when it could seem to be more affordable that way? That's my big concern for people that maybe,
you know,
are in that.
Fernando, I agree with you on all the points. I mean, when we grew up, marijuana wasn't the, you know, we weren't doing, I never, don't smoke marijuana. It's not my, you know, I've never been involved with that. But I will tell you, you're right. The the problems associated with it in terms of incarceration and every, and I think the decriminalization bill, I think it will be passed along with the marijuana bill. So I think that's a positive step forward. And secondly, I agree the black market may still exist, but I just, there's also black market in gambling, I will tell you, for people who wager. But since they went to allowing people to wager directly, legally in New Jersey through sports gambling, it's, some people still gamble illegally, but a lot of people have been gambling legally because they know they're going to get paid. It's a secure source. And I think a lot of people, I mean, hey, listen, maybe if you have a dealer, quite frankly, living in Union City, if you have a dealer you know for years, that you get the stuff that you like, it may be a cheaper price, and you may continue to do business with it, regardless of what this bill says, Fernando. People get caught up sometimes in language, but practically, there'll be some people that still obtain their marijuana or cannabis, as they say it's called now, through different channels. But some people will go, a lot of people, most people, will go through the legal process. And I think they're putting some caps on how much municipalities could tax it and how much the state could tax it, Fernando. But I think the most important thing that we have to make sure of in this bill, from my perspective, is that the minority community, that same black and brown community that for years has been incarcerated as a result of being targeted, can now own one of these dispensaries, can now produce some of this marijuana, and can share in the economic benefit of this, because that is how you bring long-lasting social change. And that's
no,
the
listen,
important that they
right
should focus
that.
On.
No, you're right about that.
Correct.
And I think you're right about, absolutely, the fact of enabling black and brown business owners to be at the table here and to be a vocal member of the business community when it comes to dispensaries. I mean, Rudy, I would argue that probably dispensaries are going to become the next big business in New Jersey. I know people would say that, especially in minority neighborhoods, that, oh, you know, what's the best business to own? Oh, you know, you own a liquor store, you know, you own a restaurant or something. I would argue that dispensaries are going to become a tremendous moneymaker for the state of New Jersey without question in 2021 and moving forward because of the law.
And I know, Fernando, you wanted to talk a little bit about the impact of COVID on the whole state.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's one of, I mean, if it's proper, I don't know if it's how much time you have. So.
No. Listen, it's definitely something we'll get to, but please go on.
Okay, so there's a lot of money that's going to be required, ongoing money, to help communities fight COVID. And hopefully this marijuana will be some of the money that, like you say, that this is going to be a very lucrative business. But we have to make sure that some rich people in certain areas don't dominate it and nobody else gets a piece of it. And
that's
I
fair.
Think that's
fair.
And that's, no, that's the most important thing.
No, that's fair. Absolutely. I think it's definitely something to keep an eye on. For sure, in 2021, as I'm sure we'll see dispensaries surfacing throughout New Jersey. Rudy, you know, COVID obviously has ravaged the New Jersey economy since March. We've seen unemployment claims consistently still going up in Trenton. We know the governor and the team that's responsible for dealing with unemployment claims has been almost suffocated, per se, when it comes to the amount of filings and claims. But it seems now, though, Rudy, that, you know, as we approach 2021 and the governor, you know, early on, I think a lot of people in New Jersey applauded the governor for the measures he took to help, you know, curtail the spread of COVID, to curtail the spike. But as we all saw during the summer months, a lot of New Jerseyans were taking the governor to task, especially business owners down the shore in South Jersey. And it seems now that there are a lot of people taking to social media, Rudy, that are those people that were applauding the governor early this year are not really getting on him. for what some would call, you know, A, quote, draconian, or B, overbearing measures in the executive order. What's the perception you're getting from people in your business and lobbying and public affairs in Trenton? Is the governor still being too punitive, or does the governor need to do more to help small businesses in New Jersey?
Well, I mean, hey, listen, I have to defend Governor Murphy on this wholeheartedly. The impacts of COVID are so severe and so drastic that I think he's been actually quite guarded on his responses. My wife is the Deputy Director of Human Services at Hudson County, Fernando. She deals with people who are having not only economic losses, they're having mental crisis, they're having unemployment, as you said. They can't maybe even feed their own families, Fernando. They're feeding, my wife's feeding 20,000 people a day. It's, you talk about government, right? This is all government funded. All of these programs, but they're necessary because of COVID. And sometimes those people get caught up in, oh my God, he's shutting me down. Yeah, people could argue whether or not restaurants should be at 50%, 25%, whether or not there's a causal relationship. But I think Governor Murphy's been pretty measured. Like de Blasio, God forbid, he's not my favorite, but anyway, he closed down schools, period. He had to reopen them. But Governor Murphy's taken a very measured approach to that. He said, hey, look, let the local governments determine, let them set up their own criteria so that people can make sure that if it's safe for their kids to go to school, they can go to school. And I think in most of the cases, and I can't, I'm not sure if there's one particular that you're going to raise, but I've seen Governor Murphy say, listen, this is why we have to do it. And his reasoning has been quite frankly spot on. And as he has said, quite frankly, does anyone believe that I really want to close a business? Or does anyone really think I want to not have kids play sports? Of course not. He wants to have those things open. But the social costs of having people exposed, it's too scary. And quite frankly, the spiraling effect of all that is it's creating bigger problems.
Well, when you mention that, though, Rudy, and again, I mean, I look at the numbers that the governor talks about on his daily briefings, and, you know, Insider NJ does a great job in covering them and certainly making them, you know, readily available.
Insider NJ does a great job covering that.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you. No, thank you for sure. But Rudy, when you look at these numbers, though, a lot of people will still say, hey, listen, we get it. We want to curtail the virus. We know it's flu season coming up. It's going to be compounded by that. It's going to make it even more problematic. But Rudy, there are still some people in New Jersey that might just say, listen, we're not trying to be political about this. We're just saying that, hey, if people want to stay home, okay, fine, stay home. We're not going to criticize those people staying home. But there are other New Jerseyans, Rudy, that might say, you know what? If we're going to take the necessary measures and we're going to take the risk, hey, let us live. Let us open our businesses. Let us be out there. Let us, again, you know, comply with certain provisions, right? It just can't be, you know, pandemonium or anarchy. But a lot of people in New Jersey might just say, hey, restaurants at 25% capacity isn't going to work. It's going to doom businesses. If we can keep measures that are safe, why not 50%? And I think a lot of people down the shore, Rudy, and a lot of people in South Jersey would call me all the time and say, hey, when you get a certain guest on, ask them this, or make sure you ask a complaint about that. Rudy, I'm not here to complain for anybody, but I think a lot of New Jersey, hear it, are up in arms about it.
No, listen, Fernando, hey, listen, some of my clients, quite frankly, we represent some of the establishments that serve alcohol. We represent the Bar Association. And mm-hmm. there's certain things that we've taken, like, hey, you can't go to the bar. But can, if we serve food, it's okay to serve food and a drink. And can we put up plexiglass? Can we do this? And the governor's office has worked with us on certain measures. But you're right. No matter what we do, Fernando, at the end of the day, unless there is another direct round of relief for these restaurant owners, bar owners, and people, you'll never catch up because the governor cannot, because there is no 100% safe way to open up anything without affecting someone down the line.
Oh, no.
Because no one wants to intentionally give Corona or COVID to anyone else. And no one,
of course.
You
yeah.
just can't.
Of
course. Yeah. So people don't know how they, where they got it from most of the time. Some people do now through tracing, and hopefully that works. But really, it's all about hospital capacity. And one of the things I've learned is the hospitals are pretty busy.
Yeah, they are. They are. Yeah. No, they are. Unfortunately, so, they are. We certainly don't want them to be capacity. Rudy, we'll get back to that in a moment. I just, for my audience here, I want to make sure that they have a good understanding of MBI. And again, ladies and gentlemen, you can check out the website there at www.mbiglucksaw.com. Now, Rudy, looking at the website here, I'm looking at the services that MBI provides, and certainly they include government relations, regulatory affairs, strategic communications, crisis management, community outreach, and agency coordinations, and governmental marketing. I don't want to put you on the spot here, but of those six, which is the most difficult, or are they all difficult?
Well, I mean, I believe anytime you're dealing in the government space, it is difficult. Luckily, we've assembled a team, and I'm very proud. I'm one of the only firms in the state that's minority-owned and operated, in addition to some of my partners. But we made it a mission to have diversity, to have inclusion. Many of my partners are women of people of color, and we have people who have served in the legislature, people who have been in heads of agencies, people who know how to have access to government. And especially now during this COVID period, one of the biggest problems some of those local establishments are having is not having access to government. For example, we represent 7-Eleven, Fernando, and that's one of our clients. We were able to make the case that they were an essential client so they could remain open. We represent the Liquor Store Association, the wine and beverage industry. We were able to make sure that those stayed open during this state. Those are important factors that we know how to access government when sometimes it feels, especially when they had the shutdowns and everything, that it was hard to make your case or press your case. And I think that's been one of the hardest things, is learning how to work in this environment where your phone just rings constantly, but you really can't see anyone. It's a different way of communicating with people.
Well, it sounds fascinating. And I think for my audience, especially for a lot of my students that listen to my podcast every week, what can you tell us about some of the prerequisites about either being in lobbying or in public affairs? Do you need a law degree? Is that a mandatory type of education when you're talking about this sort of industry and business? Or is it graduate degrees? Or is it just undergraduate? Like, what is the best candidate for a person to pursue a career in this?
You do not need a law degree. You do not need an undergraduate degree at all. But I will tell you, being a lawyer, there's a lot of nuances in the law, as you know. And like you say, little details do change the meaning. And if you don't have experience in actually reading a law and how to go through its different provisions and how they may impact previous provisions, you may be at a disadvantage. But it's not rocket science, that's for sure. It's more about being tenacious, thinking outside of the box, learning how to communicate with people. And I think a lot of people have that skill set that are not lawyers and who even do not have degrees. I think my brother Pepe and Frankie, who are not lawyers, could probably argue down most people and make better cases than most people I deal with. But I will tell you, you don't need to. Those young students, if they have a passion for the law, if they have a passion for making change, if they have a passion for being involved with different causes and different aspects where they think that they can make a change will make a difference, I think that's what led me to become a lobbyist. I think that's what, if that's their calling, it's possible, and they should pursue it because it is a nice way to make a living, but it's a very difficult way to make a living, quite frankly. Sometimes, listen, I became a lobbyist because Albio Series ran for Congress. I mean, when he had just become an assemblyman, sorry, and no one knew who Albio Series was, and he used to be my running mate. So I became a lobbyist because I was the only one that knew him.
There you go.
And so it's different. Different relationships help. It's got a Rolodex helps. But on top of that, just knowing how to come up with arguments and frame your issues and deliver your message is the best way to do it. And I always said working within the confines of government is the best way to change government. I still believe that to this day.
Well, listen, it sounds like it's very fulfilling, but it's demanding as well, like any other career, Rudy. So it's definitely, you know, something to that you have to be proud of because of the work you're putting into, and certainly the impact and sort of the outreach that MBI has, being one of New Jersey's most respected public affairs firms. Rudy, real quick, before I let you go, I just want to pick your brain politically. You know, you grew up in Hudson County, as we both have. You know, we're the product of Cuban parents. And, you know, politics often, when it comes to Cubans, that becomes a whole different conversation. And I know you're a proud Democrat, but I would argue.
Hey, Noche buena. It becomes sometimes a little heated after dinner.
Absolutely. Okay. No, you're absolutely right about it. Whether it's Thanksgiving dinner, ahí comiendo pavo, having turkey, you know, los arroz frijoles negro, black, you know, white rice and black beans. But Rudy, I would say this, and I think whether it's in New Jersey or even nationally, I think both parties, I think they see the need for a rebranding to some extent. But I would argue here in New Jersey, though, Rudy, you know, Democrats have run the legislature for almost 25 years. Yes, we've had governors, you know, it's alternated, you know, some Republicans, some Democrats. But it just seems that, especially here in New Jersey, the Democratic Party, I think, is in a state right now or in a phase where they're almost at an impasse. Because, and I'll quote my grandmother, she was 101 before she passed the summer. But my grandmother always had a very funny line, and I'm sure you being Cuban, you've heard this too. And I'll sort of translate it in English to our audience because it may not sound as funny. But my grandmother always used to say, hey, you know, not every Democrat is a communist or a leftist or whatever, because there are a lot of good Democrats. You know, we live here in Hudson County, where I live in Union City with Mayor Stack, State Senator Stack. He's a great public servant. We have other Democrats that are very honorable and reputable. But my grandmother always used to say, you know, not every Democrat's a communist or a leftist. But she would say, Fernandito, every leftist and every communist is a Democrat. And that's an old school Cuban thing, right, that my abuela would say. And you know what, Rudy? Yeah. It seems that, you know, is the Democratic Party too far left? Because I can tell you right now, as a student of history, I think John F. Kennedy, right now in his grave, is thinking, this is not the Democrat Party I remember from 60 years ago. At times, do you feel that way? Because I know you're a very dedicated Democrat. Do you feel that way about the party maybe moving too far left?
Well, I will tell you that I'm a very proud now. I used to be a left wing Democrat, but now I think I'm a very moderate Democrat. And okay. But I think our party is big enough to include all those factions. I think we have a danger, quite frankly. There's certain factors, and listen, I'm no fan of AOC. I'm no fan of Bernie Sanders, and I say that publicly. And I don't. That's not my movement. And like you said, we know what communism is, and we
yeah.
know the effects of that. But I will tell you, you know, your grandmother, did she come here with you in '68?
My grandmother and my grandfather with my mother and my aunt in '68. Yes, I mean I was born here, but yeah, they
all right,
came
so
from
we
Cuba.
All, we all,
yeah.
Okay, so we all came on the Lyndon Baines Johnson Freedom Flight, a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
You know when the next largest immigration came under Jimmy Carter, a Democrat.
Yeah.
Then under
mm-hmm.
Bill Clinton. So I just want to tell you, all the Cubans that are here, that's how I finalize my meals on Christmas Eve with my brothers. Hey, thank God for the Democrats, otherwise the Cubans wouldn't be here. But, sorry about that. That was a Cuban story I had to tell.
No,
Fernando,
of
but No, but going back to the issues, hey, look, are we going too far left? I don't know. It depends. When you look at it in history, people always say, oh, my God, we can't. People are going to move out of New Jersey because it's too costly. Well, New Jersey, I think, has more residents now than it did 20 years ago when I started in the legislature.
Yeah.
They're saying, oh, my God, we can't afford to live here. There's more people moving in. We can't find a job here. There's more jobs here now and better paying jobs than ever. I will say that people always say that, oh, it was so much better before than it is now. Now, look at this. The opportunities is not that big or great. When I was in the legislature, out of 120 legislators, I was the only Hispanic in Trenton. Now, there are more, and there's more on the way. When I was one of the only mayors that were Hispanic in the state of New Jersey, now there are more. Every year, there's increases in opportunities for people. Some people, I think the progressive increases and people spending money, time, and energy on those factors are helpful. I think what's destructive to the Democratic Party is when, if we get into a civil war like the Republicans did with the Tea Party,
mm-hmm.
then they lost control because they went too far right, in my estimation. And I think that's a danger in the Democratic Party that we may face at some point. But here in Jersey, we're pretty moderate Democrats. We're very moderate Democrats. And generally, and this state is not a radical state. Even though we've got very Democrat in the last couple of elections, we are still, I mean, Governor Murphy was only here for 4 years. Before that, we had 8 years of Republican governor.
Yeah. No,
so
no,
we're
Rudy,
still
you're,
a very...
No, you're right about that. I think that, you know, obviously New Jersey, there are pockets of the state that maybe are conservative. There are pockets of the state that are more progressive. I get that. And we see that more in the urban areas, right, the cities, and maybe down South Jersey, the shore, maybe they're a little more conservative. But you're right. New Jersey tends to be a pretty moderate state. It has been a blue state since 1992,
right.
Which is the last time because – you know, since last time New Jersey went for a Republican in a presidential election was 1988 with George H.W. Bush. And since 1992 with Bill Clinton, New Jersey's been consistently Democratic since then. So, and we know that, a lot of House seats as well, you know, U.S. Senate seats. So New Jersey's been predominantly blue. But you made a good point about, you know, you became more of a moderate Democrat. Rudy, why is that? Does that happen because of just age or time or experience or maybe just issues in the platform that maybe make you change your mind? Like,
What contributed to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what some of the people on the left of the Democratic Party are proposing, I think it's untenable, and I think it's really not fair to the majority of people. Hey, look, I know a lot of people who are Republicans. They don't mind giving somebody an opportunity and investing in early childhood education or the things that are important to giving someone a chance to do better and to or economic stimulus plans that help people get out of poverty and really do more for themselves. Change a social voucher for an economic voucher where maybe they could prosper and help themselves, right? I don't think people object to that. I think where they object is saying like, oh, no, here you go. Everybody who wants to, here's $5,000. You don't have to go to work this month. Here you go. Well, why? So what's my incentive for going to work? And I think that is where I draw the line, because I've seen that movie. I've lived that story, and I know where that story ends up. And I'm very scared of that. And, there's no panacea. If you could tell me Cuba's better off today than it was in 1959 when Fidel took it over, I would have to be quiet. Or any other communist country, if they're better off. Besides maybe China, I suppose.
You're right.
Because they went
to
a hybrid model.
No, you're right about
that. But outside... So, I don't know, Fernando. That's what drives me to... Back then, I was the only one, when I was fighting English only, when I was fighting for Abbott education, when I was fighting for bilingual education, when I was fighting for legal migration into this country, I was considered a radical. So the times make your position. If you're consistent, you could be on different sides of the pendulum, depending on how the moods swing.
No, that's right. That's right. No, I agree with you completely.
I haven't changed my philosophy, but what I have changed is where that places me on the I don't know, whatever measuring sticks they use in those Democratic Party things.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Rudy, before I let you go, anything exciting coming up in 2021 when it comes to MBI, any new developments, or, is there just a different direction that the state's going to be going as it pertains to lobbying and public affairs, and is MBI going to be in the middle of that?
Well, I mean, listen, we're very proud. We've been down there we're one of the longest serving lobbying firms, most established lobbying firms in New Jersey. We serve over 100 something clients, ranging from health insurance companies like Horizon to the FMBA to the Wine and Spirits Association to like convenience stores, and we represent a wide array of people who have and need service. We represent financial advisory companies like NW Financial, CUC Energy, that does energy aggregation in the municipal market without preying on people. We have a lot of different clients. Lockheed Martin, for example, which has been incredible, keeping people employed and working safely in New Jersey while still doing everything they can. But we represent a wide array of people. And I think what's changed is how you deliver your message, Fernando. I think there'll be more of that. I think 2021 will be very exciting because it'll be a political year. And when all 120 seats of the legislature are up and the governor's office, it's always the craziest time in Trenton. It's going to be make for an entertaining year for your podcast.
Oh, absolutely.
Fernando, I look forward to keeping informed through you.
I appreciate that.
It's been sincerely my pleasure being part of it. Your demeanor, your way you handle stuff, but also the way you're not afraid to tackle what you think is commendable. I praise you.
Thank you, Rudy. Thank you, Rudy.
I thank you for this opportunity to be on your show, sir.
Rudy, I appreciate that for the kind words. And real quick before I let you go, I always give my guests the opportunity to, have a good conversation, and I welcome you back definitely in the new year. Obviously, I'll have you on my Real Talk show later on this month, and everyone will be looking forward to that. But Rudy, I've been the one asking questions for the last, 45 minutes or so. Now I'll give you the floor, sir. If you got a question for me, you want to pick my brain, mira, ya, es tu tiempo. It's your time. What do you got for me?
Well, no, I mean, Fernando, have you evolved in terms of politics, or did you go more, I'm going to say, from becoming a Republican to going to becoming a Democrat in your lifetime? And just one thing I want to say to you before I get off to, if you would like to have a conversation with your students, I know you're in academia. If your students are interested in political science, I welcome the opportunity to address them, or they could come down to Trenton, whatever we're opening at, and come see what we do if you'd like, okay? I offer that to you.
I'll take you up on that whenever we're back on campus. I don't know when that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah.
Because of COVID, so definitely.
Offer that to you.
No, definitely. Yeah. To answer your question, though, I mean, listen, the first time I could vote in a presidential election, I voted for Bill Clinton. And I always found myself to be a center-right, center-left person, depending on the issue. I think as I've gotten older, I'm still conservative on some things, I think more economics. When it comes to social issues, I don't think it's a right-left thing. I think I just try to be reasonable. I think I try to be pragmatic. I try to just be commonsensical. And that's, I think, how I govern my political stands with people. I mean, listen, right now I'm a registered independent. I'm not leaving that anytime soon. But there are some ideas I can subscribe to that are, progressive, whatever you want to call them. But I can also be conservative. So I think I'm sort of in the middle. I think sometimes people are like, well, Fernando, that's convenient. You're not taking a side. Well, no, I am taking a side. I'm standing up for people by hosting a podcast like this and asking questions. And I think that's the job I can do for people. So, Rudy, thank you again for your time today. You're a gentleman. I'll talk to you definitely off the air leading up to our show, Real Talk, later this month. But, Rudy, keep up the great work. Thank you for the kind words, and thank you for supporting Insider NJ and Politically Direct. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Take care, Rudy. Well, folks, what a great episode there with the distinguished president of MBI, one of the state's largest public affair firms here in the state, and certainly a lot to talk about there with Rudy Garcia, folks, and certainly an episode that I think is just really as informative as you can find this year when it comes to what's going on in Trenton, what's going on with the industry of lobbying, and certainly someone like Rudy with MBI who is just, what I would argue is such a demanding type of job, but also, as we all know, very fulfilling as well. And certainly, as you can hear, with Rudy Garcia, he's a guy that is very invested in it. And certainly, the proof is in the pudding in terms of how MBI finds its way to be as relevant and to have the standing that they have in the state of New Jersey and how they've had it for quite some time. So definitely a great job there today by Rudy Garcia, the president of MBI. And folks, again, you can check out their website, which is www.mbiglucksha.com. That's MBI. And folks, they're a great team there led by their president, Rudy Garcia. Well, folks, that's our show for this week. And certainly, it's a great one once again. And certainly you can check out not just only today's episode in its entirety, but all the other episodes by going to www.insidernj.com/podcasts. And certainly you can hear today's episode in its entirety, as well as all the other great guests I've had throughout 2020. Now, if you have a question or maybe a suggestion for a guest or a topic coming up, folks, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Certainly I welcome emails. I love to get them. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj, and also my own Instagram @ProfessorFernandoUribe. And also hit me up on Twitter, folks, @ProfessorUribe. And certainly, you know, the numbers speak for themselves, folks. Tons of new followers, you know, a lot of likes. And certainly for those of you that, that watch my Instagram stories, I know you enjoy them. So definitely appreciate the support there throughout this entire year. Like Politically Direct on Facebook, folks. 1,000 plus likes and counting. And, hey, I must be doing something right because traffic is strong and certainly the support is strong on all of the aforementioned social media platforms. And don't forget to check out InsiderNJ by going to www.insidernj.com/podcast for the pod, you know, for all the episodes. And, of course, the main page, www.insidernj.com, for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Folks, no one does it better than Insider NJ. Starts with our great editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, and, of course, all the other great columnists, which include Fred Snowflake, Jay Lasseter, even Alan Steinberg, who drives me crazy sometimes, and many, many more. So I'm definitely proud to be a part of the Insider NJ team and certainly check them out. And once you do, on the website, you'll see the subscribe button up upper right-hand corner. Folks, click on it, and the morning intelligence briefing will be in your inbox every single morning when you're checking your email. And certainly it's the best coverage of what's going on in New Jersey, folks, even around the country too. And nobody does it better than Insider NJ. Once again, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. And, of course, don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Well, folks, that's our show for this week. And so I hope you enjoyed it. And we got a great guest coming up next week. We have Jersey City Chief Prosecutor Jake Hudnut. I know he's been in the news lately about what's going on recently. Obviously, you know, we saw what happened this past week with the New York City Young Republican Club coming to Jersey City for their winter gala. And certainly I think they got on the radar of Governor Murphy and certainly pissed him off. And they certainly got on the radar of Jake Hudnut, the chief prosecutor. So we'll definitely talk about that. Also, the prospects of legal marijuana and much, much more. So you definitely want to tune in next week, folks, as I'll have, again, the distinguished chief prosecutor of Jersey City, Hudson County's largest city, Jake Hudnut, once again here on the podcast. You definitely want to tune in for that next week. Well, again, ladies and gentlemen, whether it's on your morning commute, getting your daily workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry, whatever it is you're doing, take a break, tune in, and you'll be happy that you did. And remember, it's real. It's here. It is the three-time award-winning Politically Direct. Good, you know, good night, Trenton, our state capital, all the good people listening there, down there in Central Jersey. Folks, have a great week. We'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.